Step 12 is your word as law. Establishing your word as law is important. The mind is used to getting away with a lot of promises it never keeps. You tell yourself that you'll do this and that, and then you don't. You say you'll pay your friend on Saturday, and then you forget or duck out of it. It's important to establish your word as law unto yourself, as your affirmation of developing authority over the ego. If you say to yourself you will do something, then do it. Don't make promises you won't keep, and don't make promises to others if you can't or won't follow through. Become immaculate, be honorable. Don't commit if you don't have to. You can always stall saying, I'm not sure, call me in a week. People are used to that. Making your word law, you develop power. Sounds easy, doesn't it? Most people are not used to their word as law. They're used to wimping out, ducking away if conditions don't suit them. That weakens them, for the mind knows you're full of BS. As you start to work upon yourself, your energy moves faster. In my book, Miracles, I suggest that the total energy that you express as a physical body, as a mind, as a personality, as a spiritual being, is an oscillation. It's an oscillation that's moving very, very quickly. In my book, I selected a hypothetical oscillation of 20,000 cycles a second as a possible oscillation for the average human in TikTok. There's no way for us to measure or quantify how fast people are actually oscillating, so I picked a figure out of a hat. I said that if an ordinary person is at 20,000 cycles a second, a person that's begun to work upon themselves might oscillate at, say, 25,000 cycles a second, and a person that's very light might be 50,000 cycles a second, and the initiate might be 100,000 cycles a second or above. You're basically a wave state that is oscillating. That's what you are. As you move your energy up faster and faster, your ability to materialize things becomes more and more instantaneous. At 20,000 cycles a second, a person will have an idea or visualize or think about something, and they'll wait 19, 20 years in order to get what they're hoping for, and then it may still not occur. Once your energy starts going faster and faster, whatever thoughts you have in your mind, whatever feelings you indulge in, become reality extremely quickly. You think about the burning bush, and there it is in your hallway, burning. So one of the things you have to do is realize that you're grasping an immense power. Any errant thoughts, and suddenly a great turd is falling on your head from a great height. So your word as law requires you to understand your power. Understand that as your energy goes up, you're going to get whatever it is that you put out. So it's best not to use your thoughts and dialogue in a flippant way. You're not going to make promises you won't keep. If you say to yourself, I'm going to give up chocolate, don't say that and then half an hour later sit there and munch through an entire box. If you make a discipline, a law for yourself, you will follow through. If you don't feel confident with following through, don't make the law. Don't say you're going to give up chocolates if you're not going to give up chocolates. When you're good and ready, you'll give them up. Until then, wait. Embrace your word as law, and you'll see a defined benefit in your life immediately, as things you need will pop up effortlessly. But you have to mean what you say, so choose your words carefully. Be purposeful and police what you think and feel. If any crud comes into your mind, pounce on it quickly and change it. Also, don't give people a load of BS. Don't talk gibberish. Mostly, don't talk about yourself. Listen to others instead. Talk about them. Don't promise things you can't deliver. Don't agree to things you don't want to do, that you know you aren't going to follow through on. Become verbally disciplined. Don't show off. Don't boast. Don't exaggerate. Just stay inside what is true and real. Next, get into a dialogue of truth with yourself. In other words, don't buy all of the waffle of the mind. The mind says we're doing fine, and you know you're not doing fine. The mind says we're looking for a job, and you know you're not looking for a job. When you say to yourself, my word is law, then you establish a dominance and authority over the mind. And you know that when you say something, you're going to follow through. Here's an exercise that will strengthen your will and help you along a bit. Pick a spot outside your house or in the park, wherever. Find 12 stones. Go there in the early morning and tell your mind, I'm going to move these stones ceremoniously every morning from 7:01 a.m. for 7 days for 15 minutes. Then pick up the first stone and ceremoniously walk across the garden and place it down. Bow and say to the stone, thank you. Then walk across the garden, pick up a second stone and take it over to the other side. Place that down next to the first and gradually get all the 12 stones across the garden. Now pause for a moment and pick up the first stone one more time and take it back across the garden to where it was originally. Transfer all the 12 stones back again to the original side. It seems like a pointless exercise. It's supposed to be. The mind will ask, why are we moving 12 stones across the yard? And you'll tell it, shush, we're getting stoned. The fact is, you're strengthening your will and establishing yourself as the lawgiver in the realm of your consciousness anyway. You're saying, this is my law. At 7:01 a.m. every day for 7 days, I will ceremoniously move these stones. That has the effect of not only establishing the discipline, but it establishes your will as the dominant force. And it forces you to go beyond the discomfort that the mind may go through. The mind won't want to mess with it. These actions are outside its normal legislation. At this point, you dismiss the discomfort rather than accommodating the ego, which would prefer to stay in bed. Set a discipline for yourself, like moving the 12 stones, and do it for 7 days. My word is law. If you haven't got a garden near you, move 100 books on and off your bookshelf, but do it exactly at 7:01 every day for 7 days. In establishing the idea of my word as law, you improve your ability to materialize things that you want. You understand that when you come up with a thought or a feeling, when you express verbally, gradually that thing is going to appear in your life because you can materialize your consciousness. The boundary between your internal world and your external world melts. Your definitions go. You see yourself as the infinite self. There's no more inside reality and outside reality. There's only one infinite consciousness of which you are part. The ego tries to separate you. It seeks to define itself by creating separation. As you move towards the infinite self, what you're doing is joining the inner energy. Not just the inner energy of all the people on the planet, but the cosmic energy in all things. In that joining, you will be able to pull things to you and materialize them from a great distance. The ego has to go get things. It has to find things. It has to struggle to materialize things. It has to force things to happen. It has to sell itself. Rather than forcing things to happen, see the whole planet as inside of you, as a part of you. When I say to you, stand tall, be a big person, I mean expand your mind, expand your feelings to incorporate everything. You're an infinite being and you are everywhere. Be everywhere. Be everything. Once you're everything, through your connection with the infinite self, you are connected to everything. Then materializing things is easy. So you'll have an idea and suddenly there you are on a train sitting opposite somebody and you think, my God, he's good looking. I wanted a soulmate. And here I am sitting right opposite to my soulmate. Instantly. So the speed that things materialize in your life is a good way of understanding how fast your energy is going. But with it comes discipline. Be careful, because if you say to yourself, this is a bunch of crud, plonk, the great goo-goo bird drops one from the sky on your head. If you say this is a pain in the rear end, the next thing you're going to be doing is buying hemorrhoid tablets from the chemist. So you're going to use your word as law and clean up your dialogue. Don't talk or think in terms of things being hard, things being evil, things being ugly, things being difficult, impossible. Constantly clean up your act and say, hey, I feel great. I'm eternal, immortal, universal and infinite. I feel abundant. When people say, do you see the ugliness over there? You say, no, I see the bird flying above. Isn't it beautiful? When they say, do you see the depravity over there? You say, no, I don't see the depravity. I see the chubby legs of the children running across the playground. Watch your thought forms and don't make promises you can't keep, especially when you're in a dialogue with yourself. Step 13 is acceptance. I talked to you about disengaging from negativity in step 5. Now I want you to develop an individual spiritual evolution by stepping away from the tribal mind and the resistance you have within your own mind. This is a continuation of the process of disengaging. Through it, you calm your yearning. It's simple. You just have to get it. Because of ego, the tribal mind is always uncomfortable. People achieve momentary happiness, but they don't have the permanent ecstasy of the God force inside of them. They can't feel it. Instead, they consider happiness the act of gratifying the ego. So they indulge themselves relentlessly feeding themselves with circumstances and things that will keep them happy. What fleeting happiness they achieve through gratification is soon destroyed, for the ego's discomfort comes from its perpetual insecurity. Giving it things doesn't make it feel secure. It only distracts it. You know that. You buy some new gizmo and you're thrilled with it. A few weeks later, it's in the back of the cupboard and you're on to the next thing. It's a perpetual wheel of discomfort. The ego grumbles, groans, moans, and constantly yearns for things to be a different way. Society is full of people that are crying out for something or someone to lift them up. to fix it for them, to provide for them, to keep them happy. Everybody wants someone else to guarantee their security. Responsibility is shifted away from self, where it hurts, to someone else, family, friends, the corporation, the government. The process is called transference. It's nothing more than the ego screaming to be set free from the agony that it's inflicting upon itself. That's why people say the world is ugly, because they are perpetually uncomfortable with themselves, perpetually insecure. To transcend to the infinite, you have to take responsibility. And through meditation and quiet time, you'll see that the pain you suffer comes from your reaction to circumstances, not from the circumstances themselves. By changing your reaction, you enter into a spiritual consciousness, one of beauty and contentment that is not available to most people in the world. You start by seeing this place, this earth, this life as beautiful. And you've got to see yourself as beautiful. You've got to know and trust that all is well with the world, that the current evolution is the way the current evolution is supposed to be. It's a nonsensity to presume that life should be different than the way it is. It may become different, but right now it is what it is. You've got to know and you've got to trust that all is well with you. You have to be satisfied where you find yourself, satisfied with yourself. Yes, you can change things. But if you're dissatisfied right now and you're entering into the infinite self, you create a consciousness that is eternally dissatisfied, eternally frustrated, eternally angry, let's say. So acceptance comes from disengaging from the world and understanding that you are not your emotions and you're not other people's emotions. When they express anger, fear, frustration, that's just the reaction of the ego. If you're dissatisfied, it's like having a perpetual itch that you can't scratch. You got to make these circumstances right. So wander around your house and say, this is right. Wander around your workplace and say, this is right at this moment. Tomorrow it may change. Wander around your life and say, this is right and holy. Tomorrow, the energy will be more. But right now, it is perfect. The circumstances of my life are an external manifestation of my thoughts and feelings. I can learn from them. I accept it. This way, you stop fighting against yourself and you accept. The way it is the way it is. You're free. Once you get that, you're free. Say to yourself 3 or 4 times a day, the way it is the way it is. It's fine. It's not perfect. I will change it for the better. But it is the way it is. I accept that. Once you come out of acceptance, it's all over. You got it. You're free because you're no longer in the emotion. So, they'll pay you or they won't pay you. If they pay you, you eat. If they don't pay you, you go on a fast and lose a little bit of weight. If they show up at 11 o'clock, you'll get a ride to the ball game. If they don't show up at 11 o'clock, you can wait till 10 past or cancel going to the ball game. Or you can walk. Your husband's having an affair or he isn't having an affair. If he is having an affair, you've got 2 options. You can bring him home, scrub him down and tell him not to be so stupid, or you can toss him out and find another one. The fact is, once you understand the way it is the way it is, you won't have to fight circumstances. You can work on changing things. But the first point is to accept. Once you've got that, then there's only one of 2 options. They either will or they won't. It's either going to happen or it isn't. You're either going to make it to the ball game or you won't, and you'll go to the cinema instead. There aren't any absolutes. But the mind decides it has to be like this. It must be like that. It has to be 8:15 and 10 to 9. It has to be pink and blue and people have to accept me and do these things. That's just the ego's agenda. You lent your lawnmower to your neighbor, and in your mind you're saying, I've lent him my lawnmower, I want to borrow his motorbike next Saturday. You develop an agenda. Then when you ask to borrow his motorbike and he says no, you feel offended. Hey, the way it is the way it is. Maybe he's not a generous character, and he doesn't want to lend you his bike. So you shrug and you walk away and you say, I would have liked his motorbike, but I'll take the bus instead. Look at the world and be satisfied. See it as eternal. And understand that you don't have to push against the way it is. All you have to do if you don't like things is walk away. Generally speaking, it's too much effort to change things. You've probably tried it with your relatives. You can't change them. You got to love them as they are. That's what unconditional love is all about. If I love you unconditionally, I accept you. If you love me unconditionally, you accept me. Now, that might be easy to do when you're being nice to me and I'm being nice to you. But what if I'm treating you badly? What if you're treating me bad? Then you have to become a big person and not be sucked into emotion when people treat you badly. That's the test. The main point is, you're never free until you disengage. So allow life to be the way it is. And the way it is the way it is. Tell yourself that 7 times an hour if needs be. There's a famous story in the Tao about a farmer. The farmer's son broke his leg. The villagers came to the farm and said, "My, that's a great misfortune. Your son has broken his leg and cannot help you in the fields." The farmer replied, "It's neither fortune nor misfortune." A day later, the government troops came to the village looking for men to go into the army. They had to leave the son behind because his leg was broken. Then one day the farmer's horse jumped the fence and ran away. The villagers came to him and said, "What a great misfortune that your horse has run away." And the farmer replied, "It is neither a fortune nor a misfortune." 2 or 3 days later, the horse came back with a dozen wild horses following it. Suddenly the farmer had 13 horses, not just the one. The villagers came to him and said, "It is a great fortune that your horse came back with 12 more horses." And the farmer replied, "It is neither a fortune nor a misfortune." So remember, nothing is long or short, nothing is hot or cold, nothing is good or bad. Because you have to ask yourself, good in relation to what? Bad in relation to what? Once you accept and disengage, you're free. That's important. Part of this acceptance takes us to step 14, which is judge nothing and quantify as little as possible. When we judge and when we criticize people personally, what we're doing is defining reality and engaging the ego. Light couldn't exist if there wasn't darkness within which it could shine. Goodness can't exist if there isn't evil with which to compare it. So everything is relative. Chapter 2 of the Tao says, "It is because everybody under heaven recognizes beauty as beauty that the idea of ugliness exists." And equally, if everyone recognized virtue as virtue, this would merely create fresh concepts of wickedness. For truly, non-being and being grow out of one another. Think about that. If you don't judge and don't criticize, what you're saying is, "I'm infinite. I will let people be. I have no knowledge of this person's evolution. I can't comprehend whether he is good or evil, right or wrong. He may certainly be acting in a way which I do not choose to act, but I cannot lay down the law and say it should be like this or it should be like that." Not infringing upon people means not interfering, not offering them information they haven't asked for, not offering them healing that they don't need or want or haven't requested, not meddling in their lives, allowing people to be as silly as they want for as long as they want, in the same way as the God force allows you to be as silly as you want for as long as you want. Don't judge. Okay, there are certain situations where you might be called upon to evaluate. Let's say you are the personnel officer in a corporation and you have to pick one person instead of another. That isn't judging one person individually or personally. It's just evaluating your options. Evaluating, say, 2 applicants for a job and picking whichever applicant is most suited. That isn't judging anyone positively or negatively. And you aren't judging the applicants personally. There's a difference, isn't there, between judging and selecting. You're not judging the Thousand Island dressing because you didn't choose that and you picked the oil and vinegar instead. Selection is not a judgment. It's making a choice without an emotion, without discrediting the choice you didn't make. And that's different to judging. When you're dealing with other people, allow them to be. If you don't like who they are or what they are, walk away. Or try to change the situation as best you can without infringing upon them, usually by your good example. Or talk to them in an affable manner. Ask them questions, leading them along to where they will see the higher ground through their own perception, own volition, where they freely choose that direction. One word from you could send a person into a totally different direction in this lifetime. It could change their whole evolution. You don't know what they need, what their deep inner spiritual self has decided. They may need high energy, they may need low energy, so that they can properly understand high energy at a later date. In addition, let me clarify the difference between judgment and observation. Judgment is when you engage your opinion and your emotion, judging others for an action or what they say. Observation is nothing more than commenting on what you or others might observe. So you might casually remark in a restaurant that the service is rather slow, as it's taken an hour, let's say, for the soup to show up. You haven't judged anyone personally, you've just observed. That's okay. Gradually, you'll learn not to quantify things too much and to just experience life rather than to define it. If you watch a movie and you start to quantify it, discuss it, and put it in a little box, your perception of it changes. I was walking along in Philadelphia one day. It was freezing cold. I had a pair of jeans on and a shirt. There's a meditation I learned years and years ago where you visualize a little flame and you put it into your heart. You allow that flame to expand and it warms you because you're thinking of the spirit of fire. So the heat is there. I was walking along nice and warm. Then the person with me said, "Aren't you cold?" And the minute they said that, the flame went out. I was freezing. In Philadelphia, it can get pretty cold, as you know. It was minus Christ knows what, with the wind factor of whatever. And because they imposed the reality upon me, saying, hey, you ought to be cold, my perception changed. Right up until they opened their mouth, I was perfectly warm. So they changed my reality. So you want to be careful that you don't quantify or impose upon people. Don't say, this meal is very good, this meal is very bad. Just eat the meal. A bad meal should not be an emotional upset. It's a gift. It allows you to realize what constitutes a good meal. It helps you make selections, so be grateful. Once you don't have to define things, once you don't have to quantify things so much, you can just concentrate on experiencing them. You're not putting life into little boxes. So you can go from the ego's world to a state of just resonating with this infinity within. I am and I experience. I don't see high as high or low as low. Nothing is cold, warm, dry or wet. I just experience it. Hey, I'm doing rain. I have no reaction. I'm experiencing happiness. I have no reaction. I'm not yabba-dabba-doing and swinging off the chandelier. I'm just content in silence. I fly a lot. I've been 97 times around the world, so I've done a lot of airport in this lifetime. I like to sit and watch people while I'm waiting for planes. Try this exercise. Go to a crowded spot, a shopping arcade, an airport, whatever, and just sit and watch people. But rather than watching them intellectually, watch them from inside the infinite self. Close down your mind and feel them out. So don't say to yourself, that's a pretty dress, that guy's so tall, she is so short, isn't that child cute? Don't engage the mind in defining and judging, just observe. Do it for 15 minutes when you go shopping next Saturday. You'll discover how dramatically that changes your perception. Suddenly you'll find yourself coming from compassion for people. You'll enter inside their spirituality, inside their infinite self. You'll be resonating with a feeling of belonging, a feeling of love, a feeling of caring for them. Not caring in the sense that you've got to look after them, but just enjoying the heroic nature of their humanhood, rather than putting them into little boxes and thinking, that's an Afro guy, here's an Oriental woman, etc., etc. They're just eternal spirits, schlepping bodies around, just like you and me. It's a great little discipline to do, and it's interesting because you learn a lot about people just by observing. Once you don't judge, a higher sense of awareness comes forward. You begin to touch upon all that subtle information that would not be normally available to you. Twice a year, I present a men's gathering called Wildfire in the mountains of New Mexico. During that weekend event, I take the guys out into the town and I have them touch the subtle energy, the etheric energy, if you like, of passers-by. I show the men the height of their perception comes from the lightness of being. Through etheric knowledge and a few simple techniques, their perception jumps several 100% in just a couple of hours. By touching, perceiving, and not judging, the men understand. A door opens into another world. You can do it. You don't necessarily need me. Try this. As people walk past, visualize yourself with an extended arm. Push your imaginary hand quickly into their heart and grab a molecule of that person and pull it back to you. How does it feel? What do you perceive here? Who is this person passing by? Ask yourself, what is the overriding emotion of this individual? Bit by bit, once you've run 100 or 2 of these over a little time, you become very, very perceptive, and eventually you won't need to mentally touch people, mentally look at people. You won't have to mentally work out people. You'll look and you'll know. Once you know, you can never say. So remember, don't judge, don't criticize. Know it's okay to evaluate. It's okay to select. It's okay to observe. But don't criticize personally and try not to quantify things. Just experience them. Step 15, hold on to nothing. This is a tough one. You'll have to concentrate here. You're an infinite energy inside a body. The things you have around you are not really yours. They're just material manifestations of the infinite goodness. So your car, your house, your clothes are all on rental from the God Force. None of them is yours. When you depart this earth plane, you're going to have to leave them all behind. By placing a lot of emotion into having, you heighten not having because you define what you have. Everything else falls into the category of, I do not have. You want material well-being? Yes. You want experiences? Yes. But the whole function of abundance is not to have money, it's to use it. You come to the earth plane as an energy. You've got a body to operate in, and you have to generate money to sustain that body. But that is different from generating money for security. There isn't enough money in the world to do that for the ego. That's why millionaires pound on relentlessly, often losing what they've already made in the chase for more. It's partly a power trip, but it's partly a security trip. You need to be generating money to buy experiences, yes, but you want to get to the end of your life with zip in the bank. and look back and think, my God, look at this huge pile of experiences. Because none of your memories is ever lost. Everything you've ever done is all part of your eternal memory. So what you're looking to do is not to acquire things, not to focus on the concept of having, because that'll make you poor. You have to come from the concept of experiencing. You have to invest in yourself. And you do invest in yourself because you're investing time and probably money in listening to these programs. So I know you invest in yourself. Release owning and not owning. If you own some real estate, fair enough. But you don't want the real estate to control you. You don't want things that you have to become a burden to you. If you buy a really fancy car, that sounds great on the surface, but in reality, you've got to polish it, insure it, worry about it. How much energy do you want to put into a car? It's better that you have an old clunker that you can leave anywhere with a little note on the window saying, please steal me, I need the insurance money. If you have this fantastic Ferrari, you'll be constantly worrying about who's kicking its headlights in. It can become a trap. When you don't hold on to things, you're free. Don't hold on to the relationships of your life. I'm with this person, I'm with them today, but I don't own them. If they're here, they're here. If they're not here, they're not here. I'm doing this job, but tomorrow I might be doing something else. When you don't hold on, you're free. The more tight-ass you are about mine, the more money-grabbing you are, the less you will have in the end. What's the point of millions in the bank if you die as the world's greatest tight-ass? The restriction of it is grim. The more you defend the emotion of mine, the more lack you will have spiritually on an energy level, and the more you cut yourself off from the expansive infinity within. Remember, everything is care of the God Force. If you come home and the stereo is missing, you can say, ah, they've come for the stereo, rather than getting uptight. It's just gone back to the God Force. Somebody else has it now. And that leaves space for you to meditate and think about who you really are and what you really want. And you think, yeah, what I want is a hi-fi store. And off you go, and boom, you materialize a hi-fi store. And then you can say, look at these stereos, I own them all. But I don't actually own them. I'm renting them from the God Force. And I'm going to sell them to other people who also want to rent them from the God Force. So once you understand this concept, everything becomes transient. Holding nothing, you own everything. That's much better, more peaceful. You can actually enjoy the beautiful car because you're not sitting there worrying about it. You can just smell the leather and drive along and say, wow, this is cool. People equate security with owning things. The things that you own for the most part are like nails you put through your shoe to keep you well and truly riveted to the floor. It's stuff. It lumbers you down. Half the stuff you own isn't worth having because it creates a prison for you, not an open pasture for you to run across. So start to realize you have nothing, you are nothing. When you get to the point where you can say, I am nothing, you're free. Because then you're everything. If you define yourself, then there's all sorts of stuff. By definition, you are not. Hold on to nothing. Just use things, enjoy them, be grateful and give thanks. I stay in a country for about 6 weeks and I leave. And I go somewhere else for a couple of months and then I leave. And then I go back to the first country for a couple of weeks and then I leave again. In the end, my whole life is in two suitcases. I can look at my suitcases and think, wow, I'm not holding on to very much. I'm not poor. I've got money in the bank somewhere, which I use to create more energy. But I'm not actually lumbered down with stuff. There's nothing sexier, I think, anyway, than piles of money in the bank that you use to create energy and buy experiences that you don't have to insure because the government insures it for you. That's sexy. And there's nothing sexier than a woman with her pockets stuffed full of cash. Very sexy, in my view. Don't hold on to things because in the end, it's a complete illusion to think you own anything. You don't. You're only borrowing it from God. One day, God's going to want it back. Let's go to the next session.